The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Now, you might know him from being a Horselips drummer and lyricist, or from his journalistic career, which has been going on for years and years and years. But Eamon Carr, writer, musician, art historian, has released a new book, Pure Gold: Memorable Conversations with Remarkable People. It gives us an insight into the kind of people he met. And here's one of them. This is the legendary American singer and actress, the late Eartha Kitt.
I think he would be another Sir Laurence Olivier, maybe even gone beyond that because he was learning so much from people like Sir Laurence Olivier. And he was a very thinking person, and he felt everything he did to such an extent that he was very annoyed with Hollywood. And he used to practically cry to me on the phone all the time because he said the film, the last one he did, The Giant, he said they put him with plastic artists, well, plastic actors.
Plastic actors. Eartha Kitt, the old cassette tape recording, I suppose, showing its age.
Absolutely. Well, I had to bring it into a studio and attempt to, as we say in the trade, tart it up. But even then, it's still a little bit scratchy. But nonetheless, I mean, she is so charismatic and so wonderful. Yeah. And she had fantastic stories. I mean, I fell on my feet. Most of these interviewees do all the heavy lifting in this book because I just fell on my feet with these ones. I mean, some of the stories she told me, quite apart from talking about, you know, our friend James Dean, I mean, astonishing. Yeah. But Orson Welles, and she worked, one minute she's talking about James Dean, then she starts talking about Hilton Edwards and Micheál MacLearmore. And I went, hello. She worked with MacLearmore on stage in an Orson Welles production.
My goodness.
I mean, it's astonishing stuff.
Now, you fell into this. I mean, you describe yourself at the beginning of the book as being a reluctant interviewer, and you were quite nervous about the whole process.
Reluctant and accidental, yes. At the time, I was writing music stuff for the Evening Herald, and the editor, Michael Deneef, was a sharp dude. He decided he wanted a double-page spread with interview each week with a well-known, famous person, almost like the Late Late Show in the Evening Herald. So anyway... So he called me up and he said, I want you to do this. And I said, that's a great idea, Michael, but I don't think I'm the man for the job. The idea that I would have to ask people questions about their lives, it just wasn't in me. And he said, no, you know, you're the man, blah, blah, blah. So anyway, he persuaded me. So I got the opportunity to go along and I set up an interview with Jack Charlton. That was the first one. And I suddenly realised that I was making all the novice mistakes, but I just learned on the job. And after a while, I sort of fell into it. And then I was meeting lads from work after work, and they were professional, you know, interviewers and journalists. And so you had to sort of show up, you know, yeah. You had to perform. If you didn't, you were out in your ear. So it sort of worked out eventually.
Yeah, it worked out eventually. Now, you decided to record because that's what the pros did.
Well, some people sort of would have notebooks of shorthand, but I brought a little tape recorder along. And normally, you know, to try and get a conversation going, I didn't want to have it as an inquisition or an interrogation. I was sort of trying to discreetly put a tape recorder behind a sugar bowl or a vase of flowers or something as we were talking. And But I transcribed everything. And then I just threw the cassette into a box because I'd seen journalists put their notebooks into a box beside their desk. And so if they were queried on anything, they could just reach down, pick out the relevant thing and look at the right quotes. So I had these as a safeguard. I put them away in the attic, and then years later I dug them out of the attic and realised that there was some astonishing stuff, because a lot of the stuff hadn't actually been in print.
Yeah, because you have a whole interview.
I had to write it down to fit space.
So and the people you met, I mean, you recount Jack Charlton, for example, who was in the middle of a nap when you arrived to do the interview, and you were stalled by Mick Byrne, and then you have the temerity to contradict the great man.
And he insisted that I join him for dinner. And I said, no, I wouldn't interview a man when he's eating his dinner. I'll have a cup of tea out here. No, you come in, you'll have your effing dinner, blah, 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 effing this and effing that. Jack was a great man for the expletives. And we were chatting. I said, oh, yeah, that's right. Remember Steve Storm? Remember that time he kicked the ball? It was a great free kick and blah, blah, blah. And it was against Tunisia. No, it was Yugoslavia. No, Jack, it was Tunisia. I remember, it was Yugoslavia. And I suddenly went, oh, God, I'm arguing already. And we haven't even started. And then he asked his assistant manager, Morissettis, and he said, the lad's right, boss. And he said, have you got a tape recorder? It's in the bag. Put it up there. Put it up, lad. I put in a C90 cassette. 90 minutes later, Jack is still going strong. and the tape has run out. That was the second lesson. Second lesson was bring a spare tape. Or a spare tape recorder.
Now, you came across all sorts of people. I mean, I didn't know you'd done Rudolf Nureyev.
Nureyev was astonishing. Probably the most charismatic, intriguing individual I've ever met. And he came to Dublin with the Cleveland Ballet. And I thought, you know, almost impossible to get an interview with him, I thought. But I'd try. Rang the Cleveland Ballet. No, Mr. Nureyev won't be speaking to the media while he's in Ireland. And I thought, okay, right, I accepted that. But then that sort of business of being a hack, you know, it struck me. I said, right, if I'm a professional, I'll get this interview. So I rang his hotel room. Hello, what do you want? I said, I'd like to interview you. I don't do interviews with the media. Okay, what do you want to talk about? I said, well, I'd like to talk to you about... I was stuck and I just happened to blurt out the mystical power of dance. Okay, you come to the ballet, come to the side of the stage, we will meet in the dressing room.
Did you have any ideas on the mystical power of dance at that moment?
Well, I said, just there and then, possibly not. But I managed to conjure up one or two and he was remarkable. He was astonishing and he was really passionate. And the conversation was intense. And as I was leaving and I glanced back, I realised he looked incredibly sad. And what I didn't realise was that he was very ill. He had AIDS. Mm. And he was dead, you know, within 2 years. But nobody knew. And I think when I listened back to the interview, he was reaffirming that he was alive and that he was dancing and that the passion for dance was keeping him alive.
Now, your interviewing career came to an end because of a change in style.
Oh, yeah. Well, sort of, it's like football managers, you know. A new editor breezes in, a new features editor, and decides that he's going to have this sponsored by a wine company and that I'm to be photographed having dinner with a guest and the wine has to be photographed in prominent position. And that wasn't going to work. But I thought, I better show willing. So anyway, I rang Jim Sheridan. Jim said, he agreed reluctantly that he'd come to dinner. And he wasn't hungry. Neither was I. We sat down and we were interviewing. And Jim was getting in deep end stuff about the family and so on. And the next thing we heard, the stiletto heels coming across the wooden floor.
Click, click,
and
click, click.
Your
click.
Person with... you've started the interview already. Well, the wine hasn't arrived. Now, as soon as the wine arrives, we have the photographer coming along and suddenly the whole thing was hijacked. And Jim looked at me and said, what's all this about? And I said, I have no idea. And I sent the PR person hopping and interviewed Jim. It was a fantastic interview. It ran in the paper and I said, that's it. I've had enough of this.
And that was the end of it.
End of.
Now, looking through the book, you've got J.P. Dunleavy and talking to him about Bean. They were pals.
Astonishing stories.
Who else? Looking down here, Malcolm McLaren.
McLaren was so prescient.
The
manager of the Sex Pistols. In fact, he was a haberdasher on the King's Road and he was selling T-shirts and bondage trousers and what have you. He put the Sex Pistols together, essentially, from young lads who used to hang around the shop. Changed the face of popular music. The Sex Pistols imploded and he went to America and hustled Hollywood into, got loads of startup funds for movies and had all sorts of mad film ideas and took lots of money off people like Spielberg and so on.
Well, it's a brilliant read, absolutely. It's called Pure Gold and it's written by Eamon Carr. Memorable conversations with remarkable people. And the cover has an old cassette on the cover bearing that subtitle.
An artifact.
Before I let you go, Eamon, just the news has broken that Lord Henry Mountcharles has died.
Oh, no.
After his family have issued a statement saying, it is with profound sadness that the family of Lord Henry Mountcharles and the Marquess Cunningham announce his peaceful passing in the late hours of June 18th, following a long and valiant battle with cancer. A beloved husband, father, grandfather and custodian of Slane Castle, Lord Henry's courage and unwavering spirit inspired all who knew him. What a man.
He was a wonderful man and he was so outgoing. And generous.
But to undertake what he did to create
the
event at Slane Castle.
The festival thing. And yet, you know, he didn't take himself incredibly seriously. It was wonderful. He was a marvellous host, I have to say that. And any time I met him away from Slane, he was charismatic and had wonderful stories. And he was a Meath man. You know, I think he responded to the fact that possibly I was from Meath, that my grandfather had come from Slain. And that's really bad news. That's sad news.
But the family go on to say Lord Henry's light will continue to shine through the lives he enriched and the enduring contributions he made to Ireland's cultural landscape. He will be profoundly missed, but never forgotten. I think that's
true.
Putting
that's
it very
true.
Aptly. Anyway, Eamon, thank you very much for responding to that news. Just broken now, the funeral arrangements will remain private, so we're not expecting a huge farewell, just a quiet farewell for a man who enjoyed life to the hilt until he was stricken. Eamon Carr, thank you very much for joining us. Well, now a reminder.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.